ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
ॐ दट् ब्रह्मन् इज़् इन्फिनिट् and this universe is also infinite. The infinite proceeds from the infinite. Taking the infinitude of the infinite universe, it remains as the infinite Brahman alone. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all.
So we are studying the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, and as we said, that the Shanti Patha is a very special Shanti Patha. It is a Mahavakya. We discussed about that. Then the next point of information, this Purnamadaha doesn't occur at the beginning of the Brihadaranyaka, but it only comes at the beginning of the fifth chapter. But Shankaracharya had given a brilliant commentary. What is the essence of that? That everything is Brahman. That Brahman and this Brahman, these are divisions made by us, the Jivatmas, from the viewpoint of Avidya. Really speaking, there is no that and this. In infinity, this and that, here and there, above and below, small and big, do not exist. Infinite means just one single nature, that is called Brahman. We, of course, cannot think about it. Avagmanasa gocharam. But we are to meditate upon it. How? Considering that every effect is none other than the cause, albeit with three modifications, nama, rupa, and karma. In other words, form, name and a utility. When Brahman is looked at with this division, which Swami Vivekananda said, time, space and causation, then it appears to be different from Brahman. That's what we call this universe. This universe includes all of us, but this universe is again subdivided into that which is consciousness, and that which is called also subject, and in opposition to that, everything else is an object. Object or the cognition of an object totally depends upon the subject alone. That is why when we go to deep sleep, the whole universe disappears because the cognizing subject, the cognizer, a pure consciousness, is not non-existent, but it is not associated with mind and body. That is why this universe doesn't exist. A second doesn't exist. Then we also have given a brief introduction that this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad has been divided into three parts. The first part is called Madhukanda. This Madhukanda consists of two very special methodologies called Adhyaropa and Apavada. Adhyaropa means accepting that this world exists, it is real, but there is so much of variation in this world, one must strive to rise from the lowest to the highest. For that purpose, the scripture prescribes first rituals, afterwards contemplations called upasanas, and afterwards entering into the second part of the Veda called Jnana Kanda. So first Karma Kanda, then Upasana Kanda, then Jnana Kanda. And this Upasana Kanda is nothing but internalizing, doing everything in the mind, whatever we have been doing externally, now we must do it internally. And there is a great psychological principle involved here. What is that principle? Just before I go, I will give you an example first. When we go into that state called dreaming, whatever thought comes, it becomes real. If I can really think, I have gone to Kailasa or Vaikuntha or paradise or hell, I will be there instantaneously. There is no gap between thought and experience. So the purpose of the Upasana Kanda is slowly to train our mind that we are in higher lokas, even in the highest loka, but finally in Brahman. The mind has to be trained. Really speaking, mind of course cannot enter into Brahman, but it can think of various higher experiences. And higher experience means higher ananda, higher joy. So there is nothing higher in this dualistic world. In the dualistic state of happiness, the highest such happiness is called Brahmaloka. That is the limit. After that, it is only not Brahmalokananda, but Brahmananda. That is also called Koshananda. Ananda Maya Kosha. So the purpose of the scripture is to take the hand of the baby and slowly guide him so that he can progress step by step. First step, of course, which has infinite variations, is called Karma Kanda. Purely ritualistic sections, and it is mostly external. Then slowly, the scripture introduces partly external rituals and partly contemplations. That is why in our puja, I explained earlier, every puja can be divided into four parts. First part, purification, called Shuddhi. Second part is called Nyasa. Slowly getting rid of our egotism by saying, this is not my hand, this is your hand. This is not my mind, this is your mind. This is not my individuality, this is your individuality. This is called Nyasa. Nyasa means transferring my ownership to God. That is the second part. And then we sit and do the third part, which is called mental worship. In mental worship, in contrast to external worship, we can imagine the best things possible. You can bring the lotus or the lily from Himalayas. After all, it is a thought, it is an imagination. The freshest flower you can pluck from French gardens, the most beautiful, the most fragrant rose, any number of roses, and offer it at the feet of the Lord. The best food, the best fragrance, the best music, the best smell, everything, the best. Mind has no limitation to its imagination. So that is where we have to train the mind. And then slowly, when the mind becomes capable of focusing, concentrating, identifying, then we do not require any more these external rituals. Just like a child doesn't require a wax apple, a wax bee, etc. Once he learns what it is, once he understands what it is, this is an apple, and this is a bird, and this is a cart or a cat, then he doesn't need any more. The very word conveys its meaning. That is called Upasana. And this Upasana has several benefits, which I will discuss very shortly. And then after that, the person becomes completely fit to enter into the last spiritual stage. For that, he has to approach a guru. For that matter, for everything, we have to approach a guru from the very beginning. Then God comes in the form of the guru and takes the disciple slowly, but he must be a fit person. That is called adhikari, sadhana chatushtaya sampannaha, endowed with the ninefold qualities. And then he tells the highest truth first, asks us to meditate, get rid of all our doubts, and then transform our life by identifying ourselves with the highest reality. This is the process. Every scripture practically starts only with external rituals, and in the rituals, do this and do not do that. You must perform this. You must never do these things. Do's and don'ts. And slowly, the promised result is experienced. With each such experience verified, our faith in the scripture grows. Our faith in Guru also grows, because scripture is nothing but Guru only. And he is someone who also had followed the same pathway, and he has reached the goal or far ahead of us. So this is how the scripture works. For that purpose, this Advaita Vedanta specially had designed, formulated a special process, and it is called Adhyarupa and Apavada. What is Adhyarupa? Whatever we are experiencing at this present moment, and we are going to experience it for a long time to come, including Brahmaloka experience, it is all superimposition. Simply what it means is, it falls under the name of universe, cause and effect, duality, really called avidya, ignorance. And slowly guiding us to recognize this fact, then the teacher tells, now we have to get rid of the superstition. That is called apavada, removal of this ignorance. That is when which the guru initiates, and the process takes place through three steps, shravana, manana, and nididhyasana. Why are we talking about adhyarupa and apavada? Because the first chapter, which is called Madhukanda, speaks about adhyarupa, and the second chapter speaks about apavada. And this first chapter is also called Upadesha Kanda. Kanda means chapter. So what is Upadesha? That you are Brahman. But first you are a devotee. You are a believer. You are a astika. And then you go on obeying the scripture. Through your experience, as you grow, your concept of both yourself and of the world and of God grow together. And then slowly the teacher takes him, yes, the lower state is also real, but there is a higher state which is much more real. The more real, the more happiness comes. More reality, more happiness. Higher world, more happiness. Highest world, most happiness. Nothing can surpass that happiness of the highest world, which in other words is called Brahma Loka Ananda. Still it is a loka. Still it is under ignorance. But as Sri Ramakrishna says, there is a vast difference between avidya, maya, and vidya, maya. Brahma Loka is falls under vidya maya. That vidya maya helps us to transcend even that Brahmaloka Ananda by negating, I thought this was the highest, now I realize it is not. Neti, neti, not this, not this. And again, for this facility of easier understanding, the scripture divides this world into the manifest world and the unmanifest world. What is manifested is called the effect, and what is non-manifest is called the cause, the seed. I give the example of the seed. And everything, every object that we experience in this world consists of three things: a form, a name to distinguish it from others, and every object fulfills a particular prayojana, utility. A small pot to store small things, a bigger pot for storing more number of things. So, whatever we experience through our five sense organs, that is called Vyakruta Prapancham, manifest world. And every object in this manifest world has a name, has a form, and has a utility. But these are all called effects. And an effect is called an effect only in relationship with its unmanifest cause. So, Vyakruta, Avyakruta, manifest and unmanifest. But both of them fall under only the creation, which is called Avidya. Then, the world is also divided into, from another viewpoint, Sadhana Prapancha and Sadhya Prapancha. We all have desires. I have to eat food, I have to drink water, I have to take rest. So, my desires have to be fulfilled. And there are desires, objects to be attained, objects to be experienced. Then we get pleasure, joy, happiness, etc. But in order to fulfill our desires, we also have to fulfill certain conditions, and that is called Sadhya Prapancha. So, sadhana means striving to achieve something, and sadhya means what is desirable, which we think will give us, help us have, experience more happiness. Nobody wants to experience pain. So that is Sadhya Prapancha. Even the greatest ascetics, which are galore, many in every religion, they undergo the hardest suffering, but voluntarily. But that is only a payment. That is called Sadhana Prapancha. It is only spiritual practice. The purpose is to become spiritual, to become godly, to know that I am Brahman. So, the whole world is divided into that something which needs to be attained and the means of attaining that one. So, the desired goal is called Sadhya and the means to that is called Sadhana. In this Upanishad, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, every chapter is called Adhyaya, and the sections that follow in every chapter are, for some reason, called Brahmanas. All these we have seen. So, in the first three Brahmanas, that is, first three sections of the first chapter, we are introduced to three types of meditations. Rather, meditation on three objects. What are they? First object is called Ashva Upasana, meditation on a horse. Second is called Agni Upasana, meditation on Prana Devata or Agni Devata. Third is called Prana Upasana or meditation on Prana Devata. Now, we have to stop and think. A horse is to be contemplated, fire is to be contemplated, prana is to be contemplated. How are they to be contemplated? That this is not a horse, but this is Hiranyagarbha. This is not Agni or fire, this is also Hiranyagarbha. This is not prana, this is also Hiranyagarbha. So, what does it mean? It means I am not this particular individual. In reality, I am that Hiranyagarbha only. This is the first step that is adopted in this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. What is the purpose? Upasana, we have to remember, what is Upasana? Upasana in English language is merely translated as contemplation. And what a person thinks, in course of time, he becomes that. If a person thinks of a bad quality, he becomes that bad quality. So, a person, by meditating on evil, becomes an evil person. The quality called evilness doesn't remain separate from him. That is the magic of the mind. We become one with that object. Just as the moment you think this is a tree, your thought and the object outside called a tree, they become inseparable. Similarly, if I can think, I am seeing this Hiranyagarbha, I become the Hiranyagarbha. But that thought had to be sustained. Otherwise, other thoughts will come. One flash, I am Hiranyagarbha. Another flash, I am a donkey. Another flash, I am a book. In fact, many of us do not realize, if I am thinking of a book, I have become a book. If I am thinking of a tree, I have become a tree for the time being. And if I have to think I am me, we have to think of me, that means we should stop thinking of any other object. So whatever we think we are, that we become. So, ye yatha mam prapadyante tam tatha eva bhajamyaham. Bhagavan says this great psychological fact. So, the first parts of this first chapter contains these upasanas. Naturally, the first question that comes to our mind, when Upanishad is supposed to teach us about the highest reality called Brahman, why is it is talking about? You see, the Upanishad is not a fool. Upanishad here means the teacher, the rishi, who is teaching to his students, is not a fool. He may be having several students. The mental level of one student may be very low. Another student may be much higher. Another student, a first class first, like Yajnavalkya himself. So, a real teacher must come down to the level of his student's capability of receiving and give him what he is capable of receiving. Sri Ramakrishna says, a mother cooks the same curry, but she cooks it in different ways. Very thin soup is given to the baby because that is the capacity of the digestive power of the baby. Same thing, a guru also gives the same curry, means same teaching, but in different ways. And once the baby starts growing, like the student starts understanding better, then higher and higher levels of same truth, same satyam, but given in different dosages. So slowly from terrible dilution, slowly the dilution becomes less and less until the highest truth, when the student is ready, will be given to that person. So let us see some details of this upasana. We start the chapter 1. And this one contains 6 sections. So this first chapter consisting of 2 verses and the second brahmana consists of 7. Both these first section and second section consisting of 2 + 7, 9 mantras are devoted to the meditation on the horse and the fire used in the horse sacrifice. This horse sacrifice is called Ashwamedha Yajna, and this is the highest, considered to be the greatest ritual, the greatest Vedic ritual rites. What happens if any person performs this one? It confers upon that person who performs this sacrifice. That's why it is called yajna. Yajna means sacrifice. And one who performs yajna is called a sacrificer. So, whoever performs this correctly, that person, as a result of that performance, he attains Brahmaloka or Hiranyagarbhaloka or Prajapati Loka, which is the highest possible dualistic happiness. But there is something very special about this Ashwamedha Yajna. There are so many yajnas are there. For example, all of us are entitled, advised to perform what is called Brahmarpana Yajna. Before eating anything, you utter that mantra. The food is Brahman. The fire with which the food is cooked is also Brahman. The vessel in which it is kept is also Brahman. And the spoon or the hand which brings that food to the mouth is also Brahman. And the person to whom it is offered is also Brahman. And the fire that digests this food is called Vaishvanara Agni, that is also Brahman. So, the giver of the food, the cooker of the food, and the digester of the food, everything is Brahman. That's why it is called Brahma Yajna, looking upon everything as Brahman. And if somebody really can do it, the example of food or reciting this Brahmarpanam just before the food is not really Brahmarpanam. Any act that we do, including Ashvan, Shvasan, Gachan, Pralapan, Nimishan, Unnimishan, whether we are breathing in, breathing out, eating, walking, seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, every action that we do through our five sense organs of knowledge, through the five sense organs of action, and through the mind, 11, five of actions, five of knowledge, plus the mind. Through any one of these 11, whatever we do, we will have to think, it is God who is breathing, it is God whom God is breathing, it is God who is coming, appearing in the form of the food, etc. I gave you also several times, just to remind, Annapurna means food. It is not that there is a person called Annapurna, and she has plenty of food, annam, and she gives us food. No, she comes in the form of the food to sustain us. Ganga Devi is not that a devata giving us water. She comes in the form of water and then she sustains us. Agni Devata comes in the form of the required warmth, required fire. For our physical body, it comes like homeostasis. But for digesting the food, the same fire has to come in the form of everything should be digested. That is called digestive fire, Vaishvanara Agni. Therefore, different manifestations of that Agni to sustain every creator, created being, every creature. So, God is creating, God is the created, God is the food, God is eaten, God is the eater. There is no division called subject and object. The subject becomes subject to an object, and that object becomes subject to another object. For example, when I am looking at you, I am the subject, you are the object. When you are looking at me, you are the subject and I am the object. There is no such hard and fast. One is the only subject. Everything else is object. No, it is the same Kshetrajna, pure consciousness, which has assumed in one form, appears as subject, experiencer, and also comes in another form as the object. Example, dream. You are the waker and you are the only waker. In your dream, there is nobody else coming and dreaming for you. So you, the waker consciousness, divide yourself into yourself as the individual in your dream and yourself as objects, as your neighbors, as the trees, as the animals, as the insects, birds, etc., and as the non-living, a house, then a mountain, a cloud of earth. So you yourself have become both the subject and object. When you are eating potato, potato is the object, you are the subject. Potato is the enjoyed, you are the enjoyer. But if you are caught by a tiger, the tiger becomes the enjoyer and you become the enjoyed. But even in dream, we are enveloped by that ignorance. So we think I am me and everything else is separate. Upon waking up, who is the tiger? You. Who is the potato? You. Who enjoyed the potato? You. So whom did the tiger enjoy? You. Everything is I. If we can create like that, what wonder is there? God can create with the Siddhya Maya. So now, what is the topic? Ashwamedha Yajna. So three types of contemplations are given in the three sections. First on the horse, second on fire, third on this prana. But there is a commonality between these three. What is that commonality? All the three are objects of upasana. Upasana means you must strip all these three of their externalities, come to the core, which cannot be changed. Every externality can be changed, but that core cannot be changed. You can change the form of clay, the name of the clay, utility of the clay, but clay itself, which is the core, cannot be changed. So like that, when we strip off the sashva, horse, and the fire, agni, and the prana, prana devata, vital force, then what remains is Hiranyagarbha. That is to say, we have to look upon everything as Hiranyagarbha. All of a sudden, we can't become abstract mathematicians. We have to slowly learn what is 1 plus 1, what is 2 into 2, what is 4 minus 2, etc. These are the fundamentals. And slowly progress, and a time might come in this life when we might become abstract mathematicians, abstract mathematics. And for that, tremendous intelligence is needed. So here, these three objects are to be done upasana. Upasana always means, we have discussed this point, taking an ordinary object and in our imagination, contemplating upon it as the highest object, something very high. For example, there is a small piece of stone. If you are a devotee of Shiva, you call it Linga, like Lord Vishwanatha. What do you see? It is only a piece of stone established there. But how many millions of people, how many times they visit and feel themselves blessed? Similarly, another small piece of stone is called Saligrama, and that represents Lord Vishnu. Where is the resemblance between a small stone? There is no resemblance at all. It is not even alive, but in our mind, it represents the Divine Lord. It helps us, like an apple is given to a child and told repeatedly, this is a fruit called apple. So like that, slowly, slowly, our uncultured, uncultivated minds should be made more and more capable of understanding higher concepts higher knowledge. That is the purpose of the upasana. So in this case, we will discuss about it. But briefly, this is not a horse, but this is Hiranyagarbha, Virat, universal. And for that, a beautiful description is given. Practically every part of the horse is described very beautifully. So, what is the speciality? This is called Ashwamedha Yajna. Before we go further, I have to tell you, nowadays in this, what is called 21st century, we do not know the mysteries of these upasanas. But in the olden days, they used to take a cow, a horse, etc., even a human being. And then this particular ritual called Ashwamedha Yajna, only kings can do it. A king belongs to the class called Kshatriya, rule what is called warrior class, according to Socrates, because they are strong, they are endowed with rajas, they are fearless, they are what we call rulers or upholders of law, so that the society becomes a sane society, not an insane society. Just imagine the rulers, the presidents, the prime ministers, when they become unwise people, what is called selfish people, chaos, not only for themselves, because they are under the delusion, we are unchallenged powers, we can do what we like, but the karma siddhanta of Hinduism comes to the fore. These very people, sometimes they are shot dead, sometimes they are hanged, sometimes they may die naturally in this birth, but the result of their evil deeds are being recorded by the highest intelligence, and accordingly the karma phala will come. That's why we see people born blind, born what is called disfigured, born with all sorts of diseases, dying very soon with the greatest suffering, whatever. It is all the result of past karma. And every true Hindu believes it. So what I am trying to tell, not only there are so many warrior classes, every person belonging to this warrior caste doesn't become a ruler. Sri Ramakrishna tells beautifully, there is one man, he is frightened of even a mouse. There is another person, even 1,000 people are frightened even to approach nearer to him. There is so much of variation between any given two individuals. So, a king, a Kshatriya king, alone is entitled to perform the sacrifice. There are certain rules. So, when a person decides, it is also very expensive. No ordinary person can do it. So, not only that person should be a king, not only he should be a strong person, he should be very powerful person, not only a powerful person, he should have plenty of wealth, because lot of expenditure is involved. So, he selects one of the best horses that are available to him, and he lets that horse out free. But the horse is accompanied by thousands of soldiers, and the horse, according to its will, is made to roam near to all the places that are possible. And if anybody opposes, the soldiers will fight with that opposition party and they subdue. Only when they subdue, the other party becomes docile and they agree to pay what they call yearly tithe. And they swear loyalty to this king. So, like that, the horse must return back after several years, and if someone opposes, the soldiers of this king have to defeat them, and then when the horse reaches the original place from where it is let out, then there would be a big ceremony. So many Brahmin priests have to come, and they will have to do a special ritual in which the horse is sacrificed and its brain is offered to Vedic gods, especially Indra, etc., and that is taken just as we offer sweets, fruits to the Lord and accept prasadam. So, the people who participated, including the Brahmins, have to take it as sacred prasadam. Medha actually means brain. So that brain has to be offered in a ritualistic manner. And this kind of things were prevalent, and historians tell us many, many people used to do it. Sacrifice in the name of gods, goddesses, etc. So, then that person becomes great. Now, all this description I am giving because such a Ashwamedha Yajna can be done, must be done, can only be done by a very powerful, wealthy, intelligent king. Others cannot do it. What is the result? This person will attain to Hiranyagarbhaloka, which is also called Brahmaloka. Now the question comes, even Brahmins cannot do. Why? Because, especially in those days, Brahmins, they voluntarily renounce wealth, live a very simplest possible life. Their lives are dedicated to the study of the scriptures, propagate the scriptures, live holy lives. That's why they are called Brahmanas. So those Brahmanas cannot do that for the simple reason. First of all, they don't want to do it. Secondly, they don't have the power to do it. Thirdly, they don't have the required wealth, etc. Not only Brahmins, other warriors also cannot do it. Of course, the question of Vaishyas and Sudras doing it doesn't arise at all. But everybody has a right to ascend to Brahmaloka. So how is it possible? For that, the rishis have devised a special upasana, a special contemplation, and that is called Ashva Upasana. So in this, every part of the Ashva or horse is described, and every part is assigned to the whole universe. We are going to talk about it later on. So, every part of the horse, very minutely, very elaborately, is described. And then, every part is compared to one part of the universe. The whole universe combined is called Saguna Brahma, Ishvara, or Hiranyagarbha. That means, by contemplating this horse, special horse, and that is only a symbol. The horse is a symbol, but that symbol is now contemplated as a universal symbol, and if somebody does it successfully, they need not to do anything physical. They will attain to Brahmaloka, because their mind is thinking of Brahman as Prajapati or Hiranyagarbha, not as the Supreme Brahman, but next to him as Ishvara, Saguna Brahma, Shakti. So the person takes this alambana, a support, a symbol, a lower symbol, to be contemplated as the highest reality. That is the purpose of upasana. And how a horse limbs, the limbs of a horse, so vividly described, and to the corresponding universe, for the contemplation that we will study in our next class. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Muhur Muhuhu. May Ramakrishna Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with Bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.